Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Welcome to Podcart's Life is Like a Box of Records podcast. My name is Helena Rafai. Occasionally, we bring in special guests to talk about the songs that have soundtracked their lives so far. For rights reasons, music might be shorter than the original song. This week's guest is Roberta Pia, also known as Bob. Roberta has always had strong roots in music. Her work in music marketing and PR with venues and festivals has made up some of her career path. She's also a DJ, party thrower and founder of Girl Crush, which has been championing women and the LGBTQ plus community since 2016. Welcome to another special guest, and it's Roberta Pia, who is from Scotland but is currently in Bristol at the moment. And you've done so many different things within music. So just tell us a bit about what you do now and what you've done over your kind of music career.
Sure. So at the moment, I run a collective called Girl Crush. So that's a sort of, we started that, it started off as a kind of LGBTQ plus night, but it's kind of slowly transformed into kind of being a platform for female identifying humans, and kind of giving them a platform within the music industry, because I always found that like a lot of the lineups I was going to see were quite heavily male dominated, so it kind of became a bit of a bigger beast, and it's run entirely by female identifying people, so I run that. We kind of do we were doing regular events in Bristol and in Edinburgh. It started in Edinburgh, and then when I moved to Bristol, I kind of brought it down here with me. So I run the kind of Bristol events, and then we've got Vicky, who runs them up in Edinburgh, since we're not doing events at the moment, I'm trying to think about different things that we can do kind of online and stuff like that. I run Girl Crush, and I also do kind of solo music stuff. I used to play in a band called the Banana Sessions, which is where it all kind of like began. Now I kind of do a lot of solo stuff. I do a lot of DJing as well. What else? I started a band down here in Bristol as well, sort of like folky outfit. I'm trying to think of what else. I've done like loads of nights and stuff over the years, like in various different guises. So I'd say the main thing's kind of like putting on parties and making music myself. Yeah, and trying to like promote other people's music alongside all that.
Yeah. I've been obviously aware of the different projects you've done, and we'll talk about them a bit more over the course of this podcast, but the fane of Life is Like a Box of Records is that I've asked you to pick tracks that have soundtracked your life so far, and also we've recently added a new spin by asking people to pick a film soundtrack or song or something from an official soundtrack that kind of really stands out for them. So we're going to start going through your picks, and your film pick is the first on the list, and it's a world famous theme from Jurassic Park by John Williams. It's an absolutely stunning piece of music on its own, even without the film. So what is it about this that stands out so much for you?
So, as you say, it's a totally stunning piece of music. It's absolutely amazing. It's special to me because Jurassic Park was the first film that I saw in the cinema, and I remember my mum telling me that like she didn't really want me to go and see it, because I think I was like a little bit too young, I think, at the time. But I was determined that I really wanted to see it because I really liked dinosaurs. So I was like, I'm going to see it, like regardless, you know. So I remember going to see it, and I just was so like terrified the whole way through. Like to this day, I still watch it, and I still like, I don't know how many times I've seen that film now. Still terrifies me. And I remember, like, afterwards I was just so scared, and like, but I kept having these like mad dreams for months afterwards about these like big like friendly looking dinosaurs, like wearing like caps, like backward caps, and like in my dreams they were like, you know, amazing and like big friendly things. And in reality, I was like, I'd actually started sleepwalking from I guess, because I was like a bit scared by it. So like while I was having all these like fantastical dreams about dinosaurs, I was actually like kind of sleepwalking a lot and waking up and like freaking my family out, basically. So it's an important film for me because it really stuck with me. Like, and I just love it so much, everything about it. And like, you know, obviously it's now become a total cult classic. And it's just one of these songs. Like, I always kind of, it was the first kind of, you know, film soundtrack that I fell in love with. But also now, like, I always play it at like the end of my DJ sets and stuff like that, you know, and it's like, it's just always one of these like beautiful uniting songs that like, I guess a certain age group of people just like really connect to, you know? So yeah, I do like a lot of 90s parties, and obviously that's like a big 90s cult classic. So it was like my last song when I brought in 2020. I was like DJing on New Year's Eve, and that was the last tune. And it was just this like beautiful moment at the end of the night of everybody like singing along, like, I'm a dinosaur. So yeah, it's an important song in my life. And, you know, John Williams is obviously like a musical genius. So yeah, that's why I love that so much.
And I want to talk more about your family, because you come across as such a kind of tight-knit unit, but you also seem to have such fantastic fun. How many siblings do you have?
I have two siblings. So one older sister, Camilla, and a younger sister called Sophie.
Yeah. And so is it fair to say that how much of an inspiration is your family to you, would you say?
Oh, a lot. Yeah, we're really tight, and yeah, they're really, really funny. So yeah, we just always have a laugh, and they're all really into their, like, really massively into music. And, you know, like my mum like absolutely loves jazz music, and got me into jazz music like really young. So, you know, I was listening to like Billie Holiday and all that kind of stuff from like quite a young age. And so yeah, they've had quite a big impact on me, musically, and, you know, and just because they're really supportive of like everything that me and my sisters do, you know, they're kind of like quite encouraging of like us, you know, in all the paths that we've chosen, kind of thing. So yeah, so they're a good bunch. Yeah, I love my family, they're great.
Want to next move on to your next pick, which is Fugees, Killing Me Softly with his song. And I remember this coming out and buying this album and just wearing it out because of just overplaying. When did this appear in your life? And again, why was it so significant?
So it stemmed from Sister Act 2, obviously. So I watched that film first, which is a brilliant film again, and like Lauryn Hill's obviously in that film, and I just was like completely besotted with her. I thought she was just like the coolest person ever, and I don't think I'd heard a woman rapping before, and so like when I heard her, I was just like completely just like obsessed. I just thought she was like amazing. Young boy, stranger to my heart. So that kind of got me, like, led me to the Fugees. And I think that was, like, one of the... That's definitely one of the first albums that I bought that, like, really had quite a big impact on me. Because she's an amazing singer and I was really into singing. But, like, just, yeah, amazing. Like, all of her kind of writing is really beautiful. And, yeah, just hearing a woman rap, I just thought it was great. And I was quite into, that got me quite into, like, a lot of hip-hop music. Like, mm-hmm. I remember listening, like, I would just sit in the back of, like, my mum and dad's car and I'd, like, just be, like, sitting in the back of my headphones and, like, just rapping along to, like, everything. So I was listening to loads of, like, Eminem and, like, Lil' Kim, both of whom are, like, really offensive and, like, definitely not for kids, you know? But I was just sitting in the back, just, like, rapping along to everything. So I got really into, like, hip-hop music. But, yeah, I just, like, the Fugees were just, like, quite an extraordinary band, you know, just because they're... To this day, you know, it still stands up as, like, one of the best albums of all time. And that song, I think, kind of, I'd listened to the sort of Roberta Flack version of it as well. But I had this, like, just, like, total love for Lauryn Hill. And that's, so I kind of just listened to that song obsessively for ages. And then that ended up being the first song that I ever sang in public. So I'd been kind of getting singing lessons at the same time and kind of getting more and more into singing. And that was, like, the first thing that I ever sang in front of people. So I think it was, there's a place called Henry's in Edinburgh, Henry's Cellar mm-hmm. Bar. And back in the day, it was like a jazz bar. And my mum kind of knew a guy that ran a night there. So I think there was one night, so I must have been like 16. So I was underage. I definitely, like, shouldn't have been in there, but they managed to sneak me in and let me sing a song. And I sang Killing Me Softly. And I just did that one song and then left. But I remember just being, like, the most nervous I've ever been and just, like, singing this song. But it was such a, like, pivotal moment for me because it was, like, you know, my first time performing and in front of, like, a room of people. And I just, you know, like, I was so nervous, but I just totally, like, fell in love with that feeling, you know. And then obviously that's spurred me on to carry on doing that. So yeah.
What was it like growing up in Edinburgh?
It was good. Yeah, I mean, you know, Edinburgh's a really beautiful place. Yeah, I love growing up in Edinburgh. Like, I've got a bit of a kind of, I suppose, like, a love-hate relationship with it, because I get annoyed at the way that a lot of the creative side of it can be suppressed sometimes. And it's, you know, a lot of the focus is on, you know, the fringe and all that. And a lot of the time, I think it's quite difficult for any underground stuff to thrive there. Mm-hmm. But it's a beautiful place. And, you know, I've met loads of amazing people from living there and had loads of, like, amazing opportunities. And the music scene is really, really good and supportive, you know. But I just think the powers that be kind of like quash that a little bit sometimes. That's just my personal opinion. But yeah, in terms of, like, growing up there, you know, I had a lot of fun growing up in Edinburgh, I would say. And I still go back as much as I can. I don't particularly want to live there anymore just because I feel like I've grown out of it a little bit. Bristol definitely feels more like home at the moment, but I you know, I love Edinburgh and it's got a very special place in my heart. So
another of the albums that I heavily invested in, and it's The Prodigy and Firestarter, but also the album that's taken from is just, you know, incredible. It's obviously quite bittersweet now because of the passing of Keith. And I know that had a massive impact on you, but I think, like, a lot of people that are kind of similar age to us as well. And so The Prodigy, I know even from kind of before Keith had passed that you were really quite vocal about them and you kind of reference to them quite a lot. What was it about them that really stood out and you know, and how did you cope with him, you know, passing as well?
I just the reason that I discovered them, so, like, I remember watching MTV loads. We, like, always had MTV on in our house, and I remember seeing the Firestarter video for the first time, and I just remember it totally stopping me in my tracks because I was like, what is this music? And like, what is that guy? Like, he just looked like so like different to anyone I'd seen, you know, and he like had all this like really heavy eye makeup on, and I just obviously, you know what he looks like in the Firestarter video, he just looks, he's quite a striking looking guy. Mm-hmm. And I was like, wow, like, you know, like obviously equally scared of him and like completely like enthralled by him. I was like, wow. And so, yeah, I just got really, I watched that video like so many times and I was like, who is that guy? And then I just got really, really into that. Like, I love electronic music. You know, that was kind of like when I started DJing, like I was doing mostly like electronic stuff. So the Prodigy was like my sort of gateway into that style of music. And it's just, I mean, they're such an amazing band that there's no other band like them really, who kind of fuse that, like, you know, punk with like electronic, and yeah, they're just magic. And I was really, really into them. I remember I've seen them like so many times live. I remember like I had one of my favorite moments today. It was that I was at Tea in the Park for the first time, which was my first ever festival in 2005, and the Prodigy were playing, and I was like, this is my big moment, like I'm going to see the Prodigy. I was like really, really excited. And when we got there, we ended up, a friend of mine ended up passing out just like as the band started. And so we were like, you know, we had to kind of take her off to the hospital, and we got taken away with her. And thankfully she was okay and it was all fine, but we were up in this hospital and like we kind of missed the Prodigy gig, you know. And I was like, oh, gutted, you know, like I'm glad my friend's okay, but I'm also absolutely gutted because I think that was one of the only reasons I was at Tea in the Park. And someone like took us, they were like, you know, your friend's totally fine, but like there's no point in you waiting around, so we're going to take you back down to the campsite. So they took us back, and they kind of took us like a back route, and we ended up walking through Artist Village. And I was like, I think it was like the end of the festival, so they had all the like big fireworks and stuff like that at the end. And I remember just looking up at the sky and being like, wow, like all the fireworks. And then I just kind of turned around because this car sort of like pulled up next to me, and I looked over my shoulder and like the windows were down, and Keith Flint was just like sitting in the back of the car, like Keith Flint and Maxim. And I just like stared in the window and I went, all right, prod, how's it going? screaming in the window. And they just looked at me and he went, all right. And then the woman who'd been like escorting us down just like pulled me away from the car, and I just turned around to my best mate and I was like, oh my, like that was Keith Flint. She was like, I know. And I was like, and I said, all right, prod, how's it going? She was like, I know. Then, you know, later on I was like, oh my god, like of all the things that I could have said, she was like, I think there was nothing better that you could have said in that situation, it's totally fine. But yeah, so that was yeah, magic moment. But yeah, just, you know, he was such a kind of amazing like force of energy, like such an amazing performer. And mm-hmm. It was funny because he's, I think he was like quite a gentle soul really. And like, but he just had this like, you know, enormous like energy on stage. It was quite like, I suppose like abrasive in a way, you know, but like, he was just such a, yeah, quite a special guy, I think. And so when I found out he died, I was like, I mean, you feel sad when these things happen. It's not like I know him, you know, but like you feel like you do know them, because like, if you followed somebody that, like your whole life and like all of their musical career, and I just felt, it was just such a sad, it's sad to think that he was kind of suffering from mental health issues, you know, because that, you would, I suppose you would never have thought it really, you know. And mm-hmm. like, yeah, it was just that horrible moment of feeling like someone that you really admire has been struggling. And yeah, and then just that feeling of being like, I'm never going to see a Prodigy gig again. And, you know, and like, when I think back to all of the Prodigy gigs, every one of them has been like really special in its own way, and like, you know, they just always put on an amazing show, and it was sad to think like I'll never experience that sort of like adrenaline rush again and with that music. I absolutely love the Prodigy, like definitely like my favorite band of all time.
And I want to obviously kind of talk about mental health with regards to yourself as well, because you and I had done this kind of short video for BBC The Social with a couple of other people, just talking about you know, mental health at festivals and tips and so on. But you've had your own struggles as well. When did you kind of first realise that you were having issues with mental health?
I think it became quite more apparent in sort of, I guess I would have been like 29. So it's like quite late on. And I think I'd always been sort of like had a lot of distractions around me. And I'd never really like tapped into like maybe that I was like struggling with my mental health a little bit, because I'd always been like surrounded by loads of friends and you know, like, I don't know, I partied loads and you know what I mean? So I kind of never really like had sat with myself and thought like maybe there's like maybe you're struggling a little bit, you know? So it was only kind of when I got a bit older so I was in a relationship at the time, and I was living in London, and I broke my ankle. I'd been away in Berlin on like a kind of like a project, and I broke my ankle over in Berlin. So I'd like come back to London, and I was like just kind of stuck in London, basically. And like I couldn't go anywhere. I couldn't do any of the things that I normally would do. And it had quite a big impact on my like relationship at the time, and you know, just my whole situation down there, because I was in London and I felt really kind of like far away from all my kind of like home comforts, you know. And because I just kind of sat in this flat, and like, you know, it impacted so many parts of my life that I couldn't get out into London or anything, you know. I couldn't really like get very far, so I just had to kind of sit with my own thoughts, you know. And it was like, I think I'd just never done that before. I've always been like a really busy person, like on purpose, like I always, you know, I'll always kind of use my time to the absolute maximum, and like, you know, probably as a bit of a coping mechanism, but you know, that had been like working for me. And suddenly it was like, well, you can't go out and do gigs, and you can't do parties, and you can't go and see your friends, and you can't do this because you've broken your leg, so you're just gonna have to sit here. And it was like suddenly, you know, everything was just really like in my face. So I think I started, loads of people hate this book, but I started reading The Power of Now, which my mum had sent to me just because she knew that I was kind of like sitting on my own in this flat and not having a great time. And I read it, and I think I was in a really rubbish place. So it kind of really helped me at that time. Just like, obviously, you know, it's basically just mindfulness. So like, however, yeah. You know, there's lots of different books and podcasts and lots of different things that like kind of get you into that headspace, but that was what I read at the time. And so I got kind of quite into like mindfulness and like that really helped me through that time. But like, I think because I was now aware of it, I kind of started to notice it more and more, and realizing all the things that I'd been doing had been like coping mechanisms. It became something that I hadn't really spoken about, and then I decided to like be quite open about it, because I don't know, because I just feel that like it helps me to like share things with it helps me to share things and like process stuff. And so I think I like did one kind of like, I posted about it somewhere like on Facebook, just saying, you know, like about having a bit of a struggle. And it was amazing, like the outpouring of people who were like, oh my God, I had no idea. And like, and all these people who like had been going through the same things, but everyone gets so scared to bring it up and to talk about it, because it's so, I don't know, I guess it's quite like a raw thing. And then I just found the more that I spoke about it, it was like helping me, and in turn like helping other people to kind of just to understand it and to like work out what you need to do to like pull yourself out of that headspace or whatever. And so, yeah, so now it's kind of, it's not something that I'm like afraid to talk about. And I'm really pleased that I've got to that place. And, you know, and I'm glad that it's helped some other people, because I think there was a time when I'd spoken out about it and I got in touch with like a lot of kind of pals from I hadn't spoken to in a long time, who got in touch with me to kind of say that, because I think I'd spoken about going to counselling, because I finally went to counselling after like years and years of talking about it. And I did, and then loads of people got in touch saying that they'd been inspired to also go to counselling, and wow. You know, and like having these like amazing like phone conversations with people who I hadn't spoken to for ages about their mental health and like what was happening and like what, you know, so like, and that was amazing feeling. So like, I just think that if you can talk about it, you know, it's really important too, because I think there's so many people who experience it and maybe are scared to talk about it or don't know how to vocalise it, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So, and obviously that was like the case with like Keith Flint, you know, which is like why that was really, really sad, because
yeah,
it's just, there's so many cases of that, especially, I guess, more so like in men, you know, just that inability to like talk about stuff. And a lot of the conversations that I did have were with my male friends, you know, and that was like an amazing thing, like all these kind of guys reaching out and saying like, I want to talk about this as well, and like, you know, so that was cool.
Moving on, Bill Withers, who he's recently passed, but this song is, it just immediately fills you with such joy, Lovely Day. And again, someone that you're a massive fan of. When did you first discover Bill? And obviously from his back catalogue, why was it this song that you picked?
I think I was listening to this. So this is like when I had my like first ever relationship. It's like my first love, my first experience of like being in love and like being in a relationship. And we just used to listen to this album every day. And I think the reason we listened to it every day was because it was the only CD that we had at the time, wherever we were. So it's just like every morning, just like put on Bill Withers.
And I know it's gonna be a lovely day.
And just, I don't know, that song just like every time I hear it, it just reminds me of that time of like just waking up, and it was like summer in London in like 2005 or something or six, and it was just like, you know, waking up and the sun like streaming through the window and just feeling like deliriously happy and in love. And I just felt like that song really just like summed up everything about that summer mm-hmm. for me, you know. Because it's such a simple song, and it's just lovely. Hey, it's just a really, really nice song. So yeah, that one just stuck out for me. I mean, all of Bill Withers' songs are really good, but yeah, that just kind of captured a bit of a like moment in time for me.
Yeah, we obviously have to kind of reference to what's happening now. We are in the middle of a kind of pandemic, coronavirus is happening and everyone's on lockdown still. How have you been coping with lockdown? And I mean, how are you adapting to it creatively? Has it kind of, I've spoken to a number of people who have either, it's stunted them and they just have no creative juices flowing at all, or I've spoken to other people and it's kind of really spurred them on. So how's it been working for you?
So yeah, I mean, I think like everybody, I was in full blown panic mode, maybe like the first week or two. I'd been like away in New York just before this all kicked off. So I was really like high on life. I was like, you know, and I basically like was having a brilliant time. And then as soon as we got on the plane to come home, just everything sort of like crumbled, you know, and it was like suddenly like, this is something that you really actually should be worrying about. And like, you know, we went into, it was just from that point onwards, everything happened quite quickly. And so, yeah, I think the first week or two, I was waking up every day feeling really anxious, like in a complete, like just immersed with like dread, you know. I just was like, I don't know how I'm going to cope. Just that because it was first the prospect of like having no gigs or events, and then it kind of, you know, it got more and more like, oh, actually, you're going to not be able to do this, and now you have to stay in the house. And so it just, you know, and it was kind of listening to the news updates every day, which is never, you know, I tend to not really listen to the news much, but obviously you're like wondering what's going on. So It's kind of like forced into that in a way. And then obviously everybody collectively is trying to process all this information at the same time. And so there was no kind of stable grounding anywhere. You know, like sometimes if you're feeling anxious, you could like phone someone up and be like, I'm anxious, and they'll be like, talk you down a little bit. But obviously everybody's feeling the same thing at the same time, so there was, I just felt like there was no anchoring anywhere. And so every day I'd be like, you know, wake up feeling really anxious, then have to like rationalize it all, and then by the end of the day I'd feel fine, but it took an entire day to like, you know, get myself into an all right headspace, and then I'd feel all right, and then I'd wake up the next day and it would be like the same like cycle. And then I think after 2 weeks it just kind of became like just like acceptance, you know, just like, okay, yeah, like actually you, there's nothing you can do about this, like it's out of your control, you just need to like do what you're told, kind of thing. Just like stay in the house and like keep other people safe and yourself, and like just adjust around all of this. So for me, like, I feel like there's a lot of pressure on people to like be productive and be creative at the moment, because so many people are being, but I think like, you know, that shouldn't be the case. I think like it's totally normal that some people are gonna feel like they want to create stuff and some people just want to sit and not do anything, and like both of them are totally valid. Personally, like I just went into, like I always do, with like I had to just go into overdrive and just do something with my time and like keep myself busy. So like I started doing, kind of getting quite more into doing my DJing stuff. So I'd never learned how to like record my mixes before. So I was like, right, I'm going to start with that. So I learned how to record my mixes and then started kind of putting those up online, and then doing like, I was doing like a Sunday fun day sesh every like Sunday evening, just to kind of like shake off the week, you know. And so like I would just get live on Instagram and just like do a big 90s rave from my bedroom, which I've like sculpted and into a rave cave.
It's amazing. It's been so much fun.
Yeah, so it's just to kind of keep me entertained, but also to try and like lift people's spirits, you know. And like I know it's like a really terrifying time, and it's, you know, nobody really knows anything, but I've been genuinely like overwhelmed by like the amount of stuff that people have just been putting out to kind of, you know, for those that can, and they've been putting stuff out to kind of keep people happy, which I think is like really amazing, you know. And I kind of feel, you know, like we don't really know how long we're going to be in this for, and I reckon it'll come in waves, you know. So like the people that initially were putting out all that stuff, you know, that it's hard to kind of maintain that energy, isn't it, like for however long. So I assume at some point that might dip, and then other people might have a moment of feeling creative and then start to put stuff out. So I think like, you know, if you are feeling up to it, I think it's like, for me, it's been like a real, I feel like being creative has been like a real helpful thing to have at this time. And I've just worked out how to do all the stuff I was doing. Like I've been doing loads of online gigs, like singing as well. And I did like a thing for a campaign called like Live for Love, or Live for Love, or Live for Love. But basically just like doing online gigs and raising money for like UK food banks. So just trying to do stuff that like makes me feel like I've got a bit of a purpose, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And whilst like helping and trying to support like artists and stuff, you know, trying, because I still have like a job. Like I've weirdly started a new job as lockdown went and it came into play. So I've been started a job and just been working from home, which has been a bit odd, but because I'm still earning a little bit of money, I'm just trying to like support other artists where I can, like buying their music or buying their art or whatever. Yeah. You know, so yeah, so I don't know, I suppose just like trying to do what I would normally do, but just turning it into like a digital thing or something I can do from the house.
Yeah. Your next pick is Hammond's song, and again, what significance does this have for you?
So this song, like, the first time I heard it, I used to sing with a group called the Bevy Sisters. We were like a sort of three-part harmony group who did sort of like old kind of like jazzy and roots stuff. And so we were like on tour at the time, and it was my first experience of like a kind of proper tour, like kind of, I don't know, I toured a wee bit with the Banana Sessions, but this kind of felt like they were doing kind of quite good gigs and, you know, playing like quite, it was my first experience of like a kind of, it felt like a more professional tour than the ones I'd done before. Like Banana Sessions one had been a bit like slapdash because they'd just been done by me. So yeah, we were on tour, and I think we were like in Stornoway or something, and we were sat in this, like in this venue, just having some food before we played, and this song came on, and I remember like Heather that was in the band just saying, I think she told me a bit of a backstory about the song, and said she just told me how much she loved it, basically. And I remember like us all just going totally silent and like listening to this song. And I don't know, it was just such a, like, I just remember it all the time because it was just like it's such a beautiful song, and it's like I've not heard another song like it in my life, and it just really stuck with me. And it's like, it's one of these tunes that like nobody really knows who the Roaches are, like a lot of people haven't really heard of them, and so I'm always like, oh, brilliant. And like I get this moment where I like want to play them the Hammond song, and every time I've played it, like the same thing has happened, like everyone just goes like silent. It's like, I don't know what it is about it, it's just so beautiful. So yeah, I think it's just like, it's just that moment of like a song just shutting everybody up and kind of just taking you away for a minute. And it was just, it's just always stuck with me. And it's like definitely like one of my absolute favorite songs of all time. It's just amazing, like has a really like massive effect on me every time I hear it. It's quite like a simple reason, but yeah, it just reminds me of being on tour, but just like that, like the impact that music can have on a group of people, you know, like individually and like as a group, you know.
So if someone was to ask me to pick a soundtrack for their personality when it comes to you, the next song would definitely probably be that, which is Young Hearts Run Free by Candy Staten. And it's again, it's just like such an amazing song that immediately just fills you with so much happiness. Is this one that you put into your DJ sets quite a lot?
Do you know what, I don't play it that much, and I don't know why, because like I love it so much. It's such a amazing, happy song. But yeah, I mean, the reason it was stuck out to me was because it was, I went through like a horrible breakup, like my biggest breakup to date. Mm-hmm. And I was really, really sad. And it was, and I turned 30, like about a week later. So it was quite like an intense, like wave of emotions of feeling like, you know, like I thought I'd like found the one, and I thought, you know, that was me sorted, and then it was like, you know, rug pulled out from underneath me, and then it was like, now you're 30, and it was just like, there was just like a lot going on. But I remember like listening to this song like loads at the time, and just because it's the reason that I love it so much is because like there's so many songs in the world about, you know, falling in love and like why it's great to be in love, and you know, like every love song is about that, but it's quite rare for there to be a song about how great it is to be single. And I remember thinking like, that's cool, like what a way to like turn that around, you know. And I just remember like when I turned 30, I'd like asked my friend who was like DJing for me, we'd like rented out a big house and he was DJing for me, and I said, when I turn 30, can you make sure you play like Young Hearts Run Free? And he was like, of course, you know. And then just like as I turned 30, that song came on, and it was just me and all my best mates just like dancing about. Free woman, Betty. just having the best time ever, and it just made like kind of made me feel like everything was going to be okay after all.
I want to talk briefly about Bristol and what made you move there out of everywhere in the UK. I mean, it's such a I think if I was to live anywhere else, Bristol would be one of the places, because it's just so rich in culture and the people are so sound and there's so much going on. So what was it, just a chance trip down there, or was it a kind of a decision that you'd initially made before you went down?
No, I'd never been to Bristol before in my life. I got offered a job with Arcadia Spectacular, who most people know them as like the big spider stage from Glastonbury and Boomtown. So I'd kind of worked for them at Glastonbury, just like helping out with production stuff. And it turned out that they were looking for somebody to help out with the marketing of their first ever music festival, like their like standalone music festival. So like rather than them being at another, they were just going to do their own weekender. And so they offered me a job, and I just saw this like amazing opportunity and was like, I'm just going to go for it. Like, despite having never been to Bristol before. So I came down one weekend for my interview, and like spent, you know, a day wandering about, and then was like, right, cool, I'm going to move to Bristol. So I just went for it, and it was just funny the way it worked out, because I moved on site with them. So they have like this doesn't exist anymore, but they had like a little sort of porta cabin office that was next to a kind of like a bunch of caravans, and then like a lot of the staff just like lived there. So it's just in this like tiny little site, like in the centre of Bristol. So I ended up just living in this caravan. I bought a caravan for like 300 quid or something, moved into it, and then worked in this little porta cabin next to my caravan for like 6 months. And it was like, you know, it was such a, when I think back on it now, actually it was quite like a wild move, because, you know, it was pretty precarious, I suppose. But like, I just kind of wanted to just kind of go and give it a go, like just take a big run and jump. And I think like a lot of it was because I moved to London like a few years before that, and I think I hadn't really taken all of the, like, hadn't said yes to all the opportunities that came my way. I think because I was in a relationship at the time, I just kind of played it quite safe, and there was like, you know, I didn't really get into London, like I didn't kind of get into the music scene too much, and because I was just kind of like, I don't know, I just didn't say yes to enough stuff. So when I got offered this thing, I was like, right, like, this is your opportunity, like, say yes to it. And I just really made a point of that being my life, like, say yes to everything, to all the opportunities that come your way. And that's basically what I've done since moving here. And, you know, like, I did the Arcadia thing for like, I think it was 6 months, and then I kind of moved on, and I've just been doing other things since then. But, you know, I didn't really know anyone down here to do music stuff. So I remember thinking, like, I was going to loads of gigs and being like, how do I get a gig? And then finally, like, I got one, and then, you know, I just managed to, like, I just went out enough and then, like, spoke to enough people that now I'm, like, doing loads of gigs, like, DJ loads down here, started doing Girl Crush nights, like, eventually found a venue who were up for, like, taking a punt on me and, like, let me do a party. So it's just kind of, it was more like a little, like, a sort of challenge for myself. Like, I wanted to see if I could do it in another place. And I feel proud that I've managed to do that, you know. And it, like you say, it's an amazing place. Like, the people are so sound, and it's got so much culture, and like it's such a creative place. There's just so much going on musically and artistically and everything. So it's quite like an inspiring place to be. And the kind of the LGBTQ scene down here is really, really amazing as well. A lot better than Edinburgh. I feel like there's a really strong scene down here, and like loads of people doing like really interesting nights and stuff like that. So that's been really nice to be around and to like contribute to.
We're on your last song already, and it's Queen, Bohemian Rhapsody. And I was, you know, stereotypically people would probably put this earlier on in their, you know, picks and so on. So I was quite surprised when I saw this on your track listing. Please explain why you picked this.
Yeah, it's funny. I was actually, a friend of mine the other day was asking what people's most hated songs were, and Bohemian Rhapsody came up as like one of the most hated ones, alongside, you know, Come On Eileen and all that. So I suppose in some ways it gets like lumped along with those ones, but like I love Queen, I love Freddie Mercury, and like this song is just really special for lots of reasons. Like it was me and my best mate's favorite song, and we used to like every single birthday that we've ever had, like, so we've always lived in different places. Like she was living in New Zealand for a bit and I was in London and she was somewhere else, and so like, and so, but we had this like birthday tradition where we'd like always call each other and serenade the other one with Bohemian Rhapsody, and so that's just been happening throughout our lives.
I see a little silhouette of a man. Scaramouche, Scaramouche, will you do the fandango? Thunderbolt and lightning, very, very frightening me.
Galileo, Galileo,
Galileo,
Galileo Figaro.
Magnifico!
I'm just a poor boy and nobody loves me.
He's just a poor boy from a poor family, sparing his life from this monstrosity.
Come, easy go, will you let me go?
Bismillah, no, you will not let me go.
But then, because I love the song so much, on my just after my 30th birthday, I got given a present that all of my friends had come together to make for me, which was like a video of like so many people. I can't even think how many people are in it now, but they'd all recorded themselves singing bits of Bohemian Rhapsody from like all across the world, just like recorded like little sections of it, and my mate Jenny basically put it together into a video and called it Bohemian Rhapsody, and and it was just I think it was like when I'd got back from my 30th birthday party. And she was like, I need to speak to you. I've got this thing that I need to give you. And she basically like sent it to me and then FaceTimed me and watched my reaction. It was just like, I couldn't understand like how it had all come together. And, but I was just remember just being so, just falling in love with all of my pals all over again. And now it just, it's just such a special song for that reason. It reminds me of all of my mates and everyone going to that effort. And because it was after that particularly like traumatic time of my life where like I'd gone through this big breakup, I'd broken my leg and everything had been really, really hard. And I'd just come back to Edinburgh and that happened. And it was like, oh, like, if like, you know, just like what an amazing bunch of humans basically. And so now it's just like anytime I'm feeling down, you know, if I watch that video and it just reminds me how important like my pals are, and you know, I've always said like the two things that get me through life are like pals and tunes, and that video like perfectly like encapsulates that for me. So yeah. So although it's kind of like an overplayed song, you know, it's special, and also like Wayne's World, like you know, exactly. it's just got lots of lots of goodness about it. And it's just, if you know what's that, there's like a meme that always kicks about that's like, if Bohemian Rhapsody comes on and the person that you're with doesn't start singing along and headbanging, like you're with the wrong people kind of thing. So I like that the song has that effect on people, you know.
We're at the end, which is crazy, it goes so quick. What is there anything that you want to kind of plug or promote that you've got coming up?
I mean, the Girl Crush stuff, I'm just trying to work out what we can do in the meantime, because we had loads of events planned for this year. Like we had like a big basement rave planned, and we had like stuff planned for Pride. Like we were supposed to do our first ever venue at Bristol Pride, and now that's like not happening. So like, I'm just trying to work out things that we can do in the meantime. So I guess just keep an eye on the Girl Crush pages. So yeah, just keep an eye on that. And then, and like, I don't know, I'm kind of doing like lots of DJing stuff. So like, I guess like my music page, I'm always trying to do little bits and pieces on there. But yeah, nothing in particular to plug.
Well, it's been wonderful speaking to you, and thank you so much for taking the time. And yeah, it's been great catching up. Thank you.
Thank you. And I hope you enjoy the right words. I hope you survive the rest of lockdown. All right.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.